Hi, and welcome to the Yes to Life show with me, Robin Daly, founder and chairman of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity. Mind-body medicine is now an established aspect of integrative medicine, and many practitioners would now strongly advocate the inclusion of some type of mind-body approach as part of a broader cancer care protocol. Back in the last century, German new medicine emerged, which went a lot further than that in placing the central focus of illness on trauma. This was the source of substantial controversy, needless to say, as it was seen as alternative medicine. Now that we've at last begun to escape the stranglehold of polarization, we can revisit these ideas on their merits to see if they can inform our approach to supporting those with cancer today. I'm speaking with Danny Carroll over the internet. Hi, Danny. A big welcome to the Yes to Life show.
Thank you, Robin. It's nice to be here.
So this is a first for the show, whereas we certainly don't fight shy of the full involvement of mind, body and spirit in healthcare, and particularly in the face of an existential threat such as cancer, we have never featured German new medicine on the show, which I think it's fair to say sits firmly in the arena of the mind, the emotions and the spirit.
Correct.
So although I've encountered German new medicine in various ways over the years, I can't claim to know a huge amount about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine there's many listeners out there who won't know anything at all. So I'd like to start right at the beginning. It's called German new medicine, but that's one of those names that maybe doesn't move with the times. I'm guessing it ain't so new as it was. How long has it been around and what are its origins?
So the founder or the doctor who discovered German new medicine, that he later renamed it as Germanic healing knowledge, or in German it's called Germanisch Heilkund. He was a traditionally trained medical doctor, and he specialized in medical research. In 1978, he went for a very unfortunate experience where his 19-year-old son was shot and murdered. And 2 months after his son died, he was diagnosed with testicular cancer and with stomach cancer. And at the time, he was given a 1% chance to survive. And He had surgery, so he had his testicle removed and he had part of his stomach removed, but he did not have chemotherapy and he did not have radiation, the treatment. He refused those, and he managed to survive the treatment. Now, the aha moment for this German doctor was basically, I mean, he was a traditional medical doctor, so he didn't know if there was any causal link between his son's death and his cancer diagnosis, but he was in his late 40s at the time. He was generally a pretty healthy guy, never had any serious health challenges. So he couldn't help believing that there could be some causal link between his son's death and him getting a cancer on a reproductive organ 2 months after his son's death. So when he recovered from the stomach and the testicular cancer, at the time he was the cancer research head at a university in Germany, Tübingen University, which is associated to Munich University. And he was the head of the gynecological oncology cancer research unit at Tübingen University. And he was working with 200 women cancer patients. And what he wanted to do was to explore the possibility to see whether the women that he was working with, whether they had gone through some similar traumatic event in their life before they got cancer. And so he interviewed these 200 cancer patients, and out of 200 of those women, 200 of them had, they'd all gone through some form of life trauma. And when he started to put the, break the 200 women down and put them into the same bucket, if you like, so ovarian cancer and cervical cancer and breast cancer, etc., what he observed was that the women in the same bucket had all gone through, had all experienced the same type of trauma. So, for example, the women who had ovarian cancer had all suffered from some form of profound loss in the way that he had suffered a profound loss before he experienced testicular cancer. And fast forward 39 years of medical research and over 50,000 cancer patients later, what he basically concluded, Robin, was that he was a traditionally trained medical doctor, and in traditional medicine, the tumor that he got on his testicle would be considered to be a random cell growth with no specific cause. What he basically concluded was that the tumor that he got on his testicle was actually was functional tissue, and it had a biological purpose and a biological function. And it goes something like, so the tissue, the tumor that he got on his testicle, the purpose of that tumor basically was to increase his capacity to be able to produce sperm and testosterone. And it goes something like this. His son was shot and murdered. His 19-year-old son was shot and murdered. And 2 months later, he got cancer on a reproductive organ. And what he discovered in this process was that cancer was not some random event that just sort of fell down out of the sky and sort of appeared anywhere in the body. Basically, that what this cancer really is it's part of a survival function. And it's part of nature's design, where his son was murdered. He got a testicular teratoma, which is quite a rare form of testicular cancer. And the purpose of that teratoma was to increase his sperm and testosterone production. And the biological purpose of that was to increase his capacity to be able to get his wife pregnant so that he could replace the child that he effectively just lost. And once he made that connection, and same in ovarian cancer, the ovarian growth is again triggered by a profound loss that a woman goes through. And the purpose, again, that ovarian growth, again, has a biological function, and it produces estrogen. And the purpose of that ovarian growth basically is to increase the estrogen production for a woman who's lost a significant other in their lives. And that ovarian growth produces high amounts of estrogen, and it actually keeps a woman looking 10, 15, 20 years younger than her years. And the biological purpose of that is to keep her looking young, to make her more attractive to a partner, and to make her more fertile so that she's able to attract another partner. In the same way that the testicular tumor is increasing testosterone to make a man more fertile, so that he has a better chance of getting his wife pregnant. And once he understood the fundamental connection between difficult challenges in life, in his case, with his son being murdered, and the way that nature responds to those events, basically he was able to unravel the purpose and the biological purpose for all forms of cancer, and they're all basically survival mechanisms. That's in a nutshell.
Okay, well, let's pick some of that apart a little bit. And so I'm betting there's going to be many people listening right now who'll be able to relate directly to the connection between trauma and subsequent diagnosis of cancer. That's something I've bumped into a lot. It's talked about a lot, has been for some time. I think it's, you know, widely accepted in the integrative community. So as a kind of a basic, if you like, of the mind-body connection that seems to have got through everywhere. So
yes,
the difference here is Dr. Harmer seems to have, well, first of all, you talked about a biological purpose for both those cancers there, that they actually, they have a biological effect, which a biochemical effect, if you like, which improves the chances for the species as a whole, if you like.
Correct.
Which, of course, is fair enough, because lots of things like that happen. So those two examples you gave there, how accepted are those as ideas anywhere that having cancer does actually, not the part about what it, why you got it there, or the bigger purpose of it, but simply the fact that it increases your testosterone or your estrogen. How accepted are those as facts?
Well, they are and they're not, Robin. I mean, if you do research, for example, on testicular teratoma, you can go to any sort of mainstream website, you will read the description of the tumor, and it's also described as being functional tissue. So there's an element of commonality and acceptance to the idea that the increase or the tumor in for example the testicular cancer example is recognized as being functional tissue.
Can you ask you to be clear there, when you say functional tissue, what sets aside something that's called functional tissue from something else? A cancer is not normally thought of as functional tissue, in as much as it's not performing a function for us.
Yeah, I mean, the cancer in the larger scheme of things is seen as being a random, uncontrolled growth or multiplication of cells, right? Therefore, it's seen as nature going wrong. Or cells are broken, genes have gone wrong, and the cells are just randomly multiplying out of control, and that's judged by doctors on the speed of multiplication of the cancer cells, etc. So there's an element. When you read the description of, for example, testicular teratoma on a cancer website, there are multiple references to the tissue that's being added, being functional. I mean, if you really want to get into the weeds, it's broken down into the different germ layers that exists within our biology, the mesoderm or the ectoderm germs. So all of this is articulated in a mainstream medicine website. The area where the science digresses and where conventional medicine is not in agreement with with Dr. Hummer's work is that it has a biological purpose, and it is caused by an event, a specific event, that triggers that increase in capacity in the organ. That part of the of Dr. Hummer's
I'm not expecting mainstream science to be agreeing with any of that stuff.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so it's more like I'm interested in this fact that it's kind of the biological effect, if you like, of the cancer is to create a situation which then, as a byproduct, would make them more fertile or whatever. So that rise in testosterone, for example, is what you will see with a prostate cancer.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, so if you look at the biological function of each organ, and what it is designed to do, then you have to connect what is the purpose of that organ, and then what could be the potential triggers that could either increase or decrease the capacity of that organ in given circumstances, and that's the part of the puzzle that's most important for me that Dr. Hummer has added to the body of medical science, basically is identifying the very specific cause that triggers every type of cancer. So understanding and identifying a very specific cause, which at the moment obviously is the key missing part of the puzzle in the cancer industry, and then what is its purpose or function? And when you understand that in the context of it being a survival function, then you can start to really start to piece together the puzzle in terms of the causes and the purpose, and then it all starts to make sense.
Interesting. Well, you know, of course, I'm aware that the testosterone in the case of prostate cancer is seen as a lot of the trouble a lot of the time, of course, by mainstream medicine, and there's attempts to control it and keep it down. So clearly there's something going on there. It's interesting to have a different interpretation of why it might be there, though, in the first place, why it might have levels might have risen.
Yeah, I mean, all of these cases, Robin, right? I mean, if you don't understand either the cause of a problem and the purpose of a biological program, then when it gets triggered and it starts increasing testosterone or PSA levels or whatever it is for each of the organs that you look at, then you see it as going wrong because you don't understand why it happened, or you don't understand how it happened. But when you understand those things and you start to piece together that within the context of the life and the life challenges that the person is facing at that point in time. So in Dr. Hummer's case, his son had just been murdered. So basically what nature's saying is, right, okay, you just lost a child, and therefore we are going to increase your capacity to help you replace that child. And when you understand it in that context, then it starts to make sense. I mean, it's the same if you take something like mammary gland breast cancer. Okay, now the biological purpose of a mammary gland is to produce milk. Okay, now if a woman has a 5-year-old child, then she's no longer lactating. Okay, now before our modern day society, the only instrument that a woman had in order to be able to nurse a sick loved one basically was a breast. Breast is a nurturing piece of instrument, right? So if a woman's walking along the high street talking to a friend and she's got a 5-year-old child, and the child runs in front of a car, gets hit by the car and ends up in ICU, what will happen is that the mammary glands will become reactivated. Nature will reactivate the mammary glands so that the mother can offer the breast to the child in order to nurse the child back to health again. Okay, now in today's interpretation of that event, we would diagnose that as a mammary gland or a lobular breast cancer, because we don't understand why it happened and we don't understand how it happened. And when you don't understand the purpose of something, then you don't have the context to understand why did it happen and what could it be used for. Now, if the child's 5 years old, the mother's not, she's not lactating anymore. So what nature's doing is nature is reactivating the woman's ability to lactate so she can offer a breast to the child, nurse a child back to health again. And once the child's healthy again, then nature will switch off that lactation process, and then the extra tissue will be removed from the breast using fungi and tuberculosis mycobacteria, and it will remove that extra capacity, and that capacity will then be removed. And it's a process from end to end in order to reactivate the capacity of the woman to be able to nurse again. Now, in today's society, we see that as being, you know, cells that are growing out of control, and therefore we don't understand the context in the why they're happening or how they're happening.
Okay, so yeah, could hardly be a more different interpretation of cancer to the mainstream.
No, absolutely. I totally understand. I mean, you know, this is, you're effectively asking people to take their head off, right? And put a new head on and right. see a problem through an entirely new lens. And that's where we're at, right? I mean, we're so far away from nature's design that understanding now fundamentally how nature functions and what its purpose is and how it all fits. Like nature wants us to survive. Okay.
Absolutely.
Our biological function has been set up to maximize our chances of survival, increasing or decreasing the capacity of an organ in certain situations in order to facilitate or help that process is the way nature is designed. Now, unfortunately, I don't know whether we've never understood this in history or it's been lost in the course of history, but that's the way we've been biologically wired. In Dr. Hummer's school of thought, nature in our lifetime will never make a single mistake. The only thing is we don't understand it, and therefore we misread how nature is functioning, and therefore we assume it's going wrong, and very often it's always going right. We just don't understand what it's doing.
Well, I have to say I embrace that idea wholeheartedly. I think nature is always going right. Yeah, I don't actually personally hold with the nature's gone wrong story at all.
Me neither.
Doesn't make any sense.
No.
So here we are. We've got, as I say, there's a lot of people, certainly in the integrative space, will already fully embrace the mind-body connection.
Correct.
A lot of people will also embrace the fact that a trauma can seem to precede a cancer by, quite a short period, a couple of years or less. That's very common. So a lot of people know that. And a lot of people will also say that failing to address the sort of psychological and emotional side when you have cancer is missing a huge trick. There's like a large chunk missing out of the picture if you won't address that, or you don't want to, you don't choose to. A lot of practitioners of all walks will encourage people to address that in some way.
Correct.
So Dr. Harmer's obviously in another league because he's pointing the finger solely at this thing as the thing. Well, I mean, this is the basis of it. So if you don't do anything about that, you've more than missed a trick. You've missed the whole game. So it is a different league, as I say, and most people wouldn't go as far as that, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But it seems like he's gone to great lengths to not just, this is not a general thing where he's generally said, well, you have a shock and then you get cancer. He said, well, you have this type of shock and you get this type of cancer.
Correct.
Which is very much more specific. And he's based that on his own observations. Do you want to say a bit more about that whole aspect of it? Because this is kind of the new territory for people. It's like, as I said, a lot of listeners will accept an awful lot of those things I've just been through. But the idea that a particular kind of trauma produces a particular kind of cancer, maybe they haven't come across that before.
The key connection that Dr. Hammer made, and this is from his own experience, right? Because obviously his son died, he went through extraordinary trauma, and then 2 months later he got cancer, right? So it started with his own experience, and it's the fundamental connection between life's experience, how that impacts us in terms of how we experience that trauma, how nature triggers a response to that trauma in terms of either increasing or decreasing the capacity of part of our organ structures, and what the purpose of that is, and how it runs its course, and then how it's unwound once the problem has been solved. Okay, so if you look at some stark examples, right? There's a concept called phantom limb pain. I don't know where we've ever come across this, right? So.
I had a daughter who suffered from it. Yeah.
So if you go to something like you go to any conventional website, conventional medicine website, but you say I looked at Cleveland Clinic. Cleveland Clinic did a study on phantom limb pain and discovered. So let me explain phantom limb pain. Phantom limb pain is when you have a limb removed, okay, and you still experience pain in the limb, even though the limb is no longer there. Okay, so you had a problem in your ankle, arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, whatever it is, and you decided to have your foot and your leg amputated below the knee. Okay, in order to remove that pain, you have the limb amputated, and after the limb is amputated, the pain is still there as though the limb had never been amputated. Okay, so question is, how can you still experience pain in a limb that's no longer there? And this is not only in external limbs, arms, legs, etc., but this will also this is very common in ulcerative colitis or colorectal cancer or IBS, where the colon is removed and you still experience colon pain even after you've had your entire colon removed. Okay, so this is a very common so Cleveland Clinic basically in one of their studies concluded that 8 out of 10 people who have limbs amputated still experience pain in the limb after it's been amputated. Okay, so then how do you explain that?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bug.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, in Dr. Hummer's school of thought, so if you look at it, you experience an external trauma that impacts the brain. The brain is the control center. Okay, the brain then triggers the biological reaction in the limb or the organ or whatever it is, depending on the biological program that's been triggered. Okay, but the pain is not in the limb. Okay, the pain is in the brain. Okay, so it doesn't matter whether you have the arm or leg amputated. It doesn't matter whether you have the colon removed. It doesn't matter whether you have the mastectomy and you have the breast removed in order to solve the breast cancer problem. The organ is only the symptom of the problem. Okay? The trauma that you experience in life is the cause of the problem. The problem is processed in your brain, and the organ is the symptom or the expression of the problem. Okay, now I'm not a doctor, right? I've spent my life in business, and the first thing that when you're in venture capital or management consulting, the first thing that's drilled into you is you can never solve a problem by addressing the symptom of the problem. If you address the symptom of the problem keeps coming back. And not until you address the cause of the problem can you solve a problem and stop it from coming back. Okay, so if you have breast cancer, removing your breast basically achieves nothing because it's just a symptom of the problem. In conventional medicine, we have something called recurrent breast cancer. Recurrent breast cancer is where you get breast cancer on a breast after it's been removed. Okay? It comes back because we're just addressing the symptom. And this is, I studied, I've now best parts of 2 decades of trying to study and understand this problem. Okay. And I studied conventional medicine approaches. I studied nutritional healing. I studied bulk flower remedies for emotional healing. I studied energy healing. I studied spiritual healing. I studied homeopathy. I studied Ayurveda. But the problem I found, Robin, with all of these modalities is that, you know, I spent many years in nutritional healing, okay? And the problem is you can have two patients, same diagnosis. You put them through the same treatment protocols, okay? And one lives and one dies. And there's never any explanation as to why that happens, okay? So what I concluded, and I could not find the answer to those problems, regardless of how much I studied them, okay? And what I was forced to conclude is it doesn't matter whether it's conventional medicine, it doesn't matter whether it's nutritional healing, it doesn't matter whether it's emotional healing or spiritual healing, they are all systems of symptomatic treatment. Okay, in conventional medicine, you're treating the tumor. In nutritional healing, you're treating the body. In emotional healing, you're treating the emotions. And in homeopathy, you're treating the environment. But it's the environment of the symptom. It's none of the modalities could ever say, this is the specific cause of the problem. This is the cause of the problem. This is how it gets processed. This is the outcome, and this is what you need to do to fix that problem, okay? And it wasn't until I had the catharsis, the aha moment that I had that put me onto this track. I started studying all of these modalities, I think, in 2005, okay? And when I first started, I was studying nutritional healing. I did a YouTube a TED presentation in 2010 on nutritional healing when I was 5 years into studying nutritional healing. I turned vegan for 5 years. I've tried everything. I then studied the bulk flower remedies, and I studied that for 5 years. But the mistake I was making, Robin, is that I was not making the connection that this is one system. You can't study this part, and you can't study this part. You've got to know how the entire system interacts as one unit, and it's not until you make that connection can you get to both the cause of the problem and work out how to solve it at the cause and at the specific cause. So in Dr. Hummer's case, if he had had the knowledge at the point where his son was murdered, and he didn't because he was a conventional medical doctor, so he didn't understand the cause of the problem. If he'd got his wife pregnant, then the purpose of that biological program would have been achieved, and it would have switched off because it would have achieved its purpose. So that program, the purpose of it would have been achieved. He would have got his wife pregnant. The biological program achieved its purpose. The extra capacity that was added to his testicle would have been removed, taken out. His testicle would have gone back to its normal size. And this is what we call today, as you know, we have these remissions in cancer, which nobody can explain, right? I mean, you know, whether it's in terminal or in any form of cancer, we have these, you know, all of a sudden you go in for a scan and all the cancer disappeared. Okay. It just means that the biological program has achieved its purpose and it's run its course and you've now gone back to full health again. But when you understand how to do that, you can do that consciously.
Okay. Well, look, that's important. I want to hear a little bit about what is looked at as treatment because, obviously, it's not of interest. The situation you described are things running their natural course. Well, you probably would never know anything about it anyway. So, obviously, the situation we're dealing with here is one where somebody's ill, and so they want to do something about it. So, you're probably going to have to tell me a bit briefly because there's quite a few important questions I want to ask you and not so much time. So, maybe just give us an outline of what is looked at as treatment of the actual cause.
Well, yeah, the easiest and the best way to solve a problem is always a practical real life resolution. Simple. Okay. In Dr. Hummer's case, his son was murdered, his testicles increased skin size to increase his capacity to get his wife pregnant. If he'd have got his wife pregnant, problem would have been solved. Okay, so in a nutshell, once you understand the purpose of a program, you achieve that purpose, the purpose is fulfilled, and then the problem will be nature. There is then a process to remove the extra capacity. The problem will be solved and the tissue will be removed. In the mother's case, if her child has been hit by a car, she uses the breast to nurse the child. When the child recovers his health, the extra tissue will be removed. She'll be tired, sleepy. For the next 2 weeks, 1 month, all she'll want to do is sleep, and she will crawl under a rock, sleep, the extra tissue will be removed, and then the problem will be solved. In a nutshell, that's always the best way to solve a problem. Even when you go into the detail, there are ways that you can manipulate these programs when you understand how it works. You can switch these off using your conscious mind, but that's probably a bit too much in the weeds for the amount of time we have.
Okay, so that's the kind of approach, though. Okay, well, interesting. Well, so his work came probably at the time of the sort of peak of the outright war between alternative and orthodox medicine, and I have this imagination that his ideas wouldn't have been welcomed very much with open arms by the powers at the time. So, fortunately, things have moved on a bit these days.
Correct.
We talk about integrative medicine. Integrative medicine being like, not so much where does it come from, but will it help me? It's still not exactly being embraced in this country, but we are seeing the first signs of it, I'm glad to say.
Correct.
And in some other countries, it's moved on quite a bit. So, we need to get over this warring faction scene and throwing the poor hapless patient in the middle of this to get shot at from both sides.
Absolutely.
So quite a lot of that is about being prepared to listen to each other, to have dialogues in the interest of the patient, always in the interest of the patient, not in the interest of being right.
Correct.
And this is what's coming out of this is integrative medicine, which there is a discovery that a lot of these things that apparently don't seem to fit together at all actually do. And
they do.
You use them together. You get better results than you do
Absolutely.
With either.
Absolutely.
And seeing how nobody claims to have all the answers at this point, it's a good idea to be looking around and getting as many bits of the puzzle as you can.
Absolutely.
So, given that Dr. Harmer, as I say, he seemed to be right in the worst time of polarization.
Right.
At that point, there would have been no chance of such a thing, and so he would have been very much in the alternative camp. Now, seeing as our things have moved on a bit, I can't see any reason why somebody couldn't look into this without changing anything they were doing. It's other treatment at all. They would just say, well, this is interesting. I don't know anything, whether it's really going to help me at all, but it's certainly not going to do any harm. So why wouldn't I have a look at it if it's interesting? So is that a fair picture?
No, absolutely. I mean, I've spent the last 7 years helping chronic and terminally ill people. I'm not a doctor, right? So, and I don't advertise my services. So people who find me all come by word of mouth. And I'm in the blessed position where I've had the ability to help hundreds of cancer patients and people with all sorts of challenging health conditions to be able to fully recover their health. But the one advice that I give anybody, and this is the approach I take myself. Okay. And that is when you find something that looks interesting, remain skeptical. Don't believe anything that anybody tells you until you test it for yourself and until you have your own personal experience. Okay. When I've gone through researching different solutions, proposed solutions to for cancer and health challenges over the last two decades. What I've always done is I've always been 100% skeptical on everything that anybody's told me. I don't believe anything that anybody says, right? Until I've gone through, tested it myself, and to see whether I can use it and see whether I can make it work. Okay, then if you have some success with it, you can turn from being 100% skeptical, and you can start to go, oh, yeah, okay, I had a little bit of success. And you can, until you, for me, it takes 20, 30, 40, 50 successes in order before I have complete conviction in any idea. Okay, and I strongly advise that. Okay, try if you find something that's interesting, try anything. Okay, but just keep an open mind, but remain skeptical on it until you've gone through and used it and actually experienced healing from it. And that anybody can do with in any modality of treatment.
Well, as I say, with the kind of basis that there is around, where there's this broad acceptance, which I'd include myself in, that the mind-body connection is for real, and you ignore it at your peril in some circumstances.
Absolutely.
I've got that far myself. So, you know, it's quite a big step from there to the direct connections that Dr. Harmer's been making, for me personally. Well, I mean, you know, I'd just say, okay, how likely is that? I don't know. But I've got a sort of platform to stand on that'll say, okay, well, I'll have a look anyway.
Yeah.
Because the mind-body connection's a real thing. I mean, there's plenty of science behind it. You know, people who are trying to deny that one are on a shaky platform themselves, you know. So, it's certainly something to look at. So from that perspective, one of the reasons we're having this chat today is you're publishing your first book.
I am, yes.
Is provocatively Terminal Cancer as a Misdiagnosis. I have to say that, Yes to Life, we do actually concur with that statement. We don't do terminal here. Yes to Life.
No,
we actually
absolutely.
Say if you're alive, you're alive. But, you know, and if you're alive, then there's reasonable hope for some kind of future.
Correct.
Anyway, maybe you'd like to tell us what people will get if they buy your book and when and where they can buy it.
Okay. So the book is... It's autobiographical, so it's the last 17 years of my life in terms of the journey I've gone through testing different philosophies to cancer and how I found Dr. Harmer, and in the last 10 years I've spent studying Dr. Harmer's work and then my own experiences of healing I've had since studying this. I've had cancer in my jaw. I've had testicular cancer. I currently have melanomas on my back. So it's an explanation of my own experiences and how I solved those problems and many others. And then a general introduction to Dr. Harmer's body of work. I'm following that book up with one book on each disease. So I've currently written four books. I've written one on breast cancer, one on testicular cancer, one on IBS and ulcerative colitis, and one on atopic dermatitis. And now I plan to write one book on each disease that will help you to solve specific health problems that are, you know, one specific disease. The book will be published by, I would say, early to mid-April. I am initially publishing it only on my website. Mm-hmm. That's danny-carroll.com. I'm going to initially publish it on my website because it's a safe space. I'm going to see the type of reactions that I get to the book. Take a bit of feedback on the book and see how it's received. You wait for a few months and then maybe give it a go to put it up on one of the mainstream retail websites once I've tested the waters.
Okay, fair enough. All right, very good. So you've given us your website address. There's some more information up there for the people to look at.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I mean, I've put a resource page up on my website, which basically is the collection of all of the various different resources on this subject that you can go to, and it gives you the ability to find all of the reference sites, Dr. Hummer's website, and various other practitioners, consultants, and where you can find help, etc. I've put that up on my that's again like years of collecting different sources and putting it in one place. So if people want to explore this for themselves, they can do that. And they've got a place that they can go to where they can then go out and find all of the different resources, places where they can attend classes and everything there is out there on this subject, to at least to the best of my knowledge. There's a little bit about me, that I've got four books already up on my, I've put a shop up on my website. I've got four books up there already. The Terminal Cancers and Misdiagnosis, I say, should be up by the second week of April.
Okay.
Inshallah.
All right. Thank you very much, Danny. Great to chat to you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure, Robin. Lovely to speak to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Danny's website, again, if you want to find out more, is danny-carroll.com. So Carroll's two R's, two L's. I want to let you know about a special extended edition of the Yes Live show that will be available from the 21st of April. It's called Pioneers of Integrative Oncology, and it's a panel show featuring no less than six of my heroes of integrative medicine, people who 40 or more years ago were trying a new approach to cancer care in the face of immense opposition, and on whose shoulders we all stand today. There will be Ralph Moss, researcher and author of many hard-hitting investigative classics that surveyed the world of cancer care, Ian Gawler, early proponent of mind-body medicine and in particular an advocate of meditation, Dr. Bernie Siegel, author of the groundbreaking Love, Medicine and Miracles, Dr. Keith Block, often referred to as the father of integrative oncology, Patria King, inspirational leader of the Quest for Life initiative in Australia, and Michael Lerner, founder of the Revolutionary Commonwealth Center in California, all of them tireless campaigners for integration in cancer care. This is a unique moment in history showcasing these six pioneers simultaneously, and one not to be missed. The first excerpt from the extended show will be broadcast within the normal broadcast schedule, but then the full show, that's more than 2 hours in total, will be available through Listen on Demand or the other usual channels. Do make a note to listen. It's called Pioneers of Integrative Oncology, from the 21st of April. Thanks for listening today. I look forward to joining you again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.